After eating, they were ready to go within the hour. By their estimation of the time zone, a few minutes remained until daybreak.
Dark night. Let's not leave it any longer, even if it means watching the sunrise. I need to get out of this pest hole.
They used the elevators to move through the bays, conserving energy now that they were laden for the journey ahead. There was a silence over the group as they entered the final elevator that would take them to the top level. They were all looking forward to getting out of the redoubt and into whatever was outside. Action would break the torpor that hung over them. Although they knew they were in the northwest, and that the earth and rock around the redoubt hadn't suffered from shockwaves and tremors, they knew little about what was beyond the exit door. Ryan activated the last internal door, and it began to rise. There were outside set cams, but they had long since ceased to function as a result of the nuclear winter following Skydark. Ryan waited by the lever to the main door as the last set of interior sec doors ground shut. When they had closed, the companions were standing within a small channel-like antechamber, similar to an airlock. Its purpose, if there was danger, was to enable defense within the chamber until the outer sec door was closed again, without risk of an enemy getting past and into the redoubt. Natural dangers were another matter, though. Ryan prepared to open the door when Mildred gently touched his shoulder.
You realize that if there's water out there, you're gonna have to move pretty damn quick. The pressure, if we're below sea level, will shoot it through the gap.
If water comes through as the door starts to rise, we should have enough time to get the door closed again before this fills up. Anyway, chances are it won't be underwater. The tunnels would have been cracked with that much pressure, and there's no sign of dampness or leakage.
Mildred nodded. Ryan was right. There hadn't been any of the usual signs of a high water table, and they had rarely seen a redoubt with less stress damage or water infiltration.
Okay. Triple red and in position.
Ryan moved to press the lever, which they all knew was usually Dean's job. The companions fanned out on either side of the sec door. Christy and Jack lined up behind Ryan. The one-eyed man had unholstered his Sig Sauer, holding it in his left hand as he pressed the lever with his right. Jack had his .357 Magnum Colt Python in hand, while Christy had her .38 caliber Smith & Wesson ready. On the far side of the channel, JB took the front position, choosing to shoulder his M4000, which, with its load of barbed metal flechettes, would wreak havoc on any flesh and blood enemy who may be lying in wait. Behind him, Mildred was ready with her checkmate ZKR 551 target pistol. It wouldn't cause as wide a range of damage as JB's blaster, but with Mildred's marksmanship, it was just as effective. Doc took the rear. The most vulnerable of the companions, he nonetheless had a sheer granite will within him that would always make him a formidable opponent. He had his Lama percussion pistol, which had the ability to inflict maximum damage on anything hostile that approached. Ryan pressed hard on the lever, and the outer door began to grind and open slowly. There was no inrush of water. Neither was there a trickle of rock and gravel that would indicate they were blocked in by rock. As the door opened wider, the light from the redoubt tunnel flooded onto the land beyond. Dawn hadn't yet broken, and Ryan cursed under his breath, knowing that the light streaming from the redoubt made them an easy target. He released the lever and flattened himself against the wall, motioning to the others to do likewise. From what he had seen before pulling back, the land beyond the redoubt entrance was barren and flat, and there was a track that led from the door to the level ground. It was a shallow incline, and the dust on the track was undisturbed, suggesting that no one had been sniffing around the redoubt entrance for a long time. He tried to still his breathing and listen, straining for any noises that may betray anyone waiting in ambush, but he couldn't hear anything. He looked at Jack. The albino youth's hunting senses were finely honed, but the teen shook his head. He could neither hear nor smell anything dangerous out there. Ryan then looked at Christy. With her doomy sense, her semi-sentient hair would curl tightly and protectively to her scalp if there was imminent danger. The Titian mane was free-flowing, confirming Jack's assessment. The one-eyed man signaled across to the armorer. They would move out, covered by their companions, and wreck the area. He counted to three and signaled. The two men rolled under the partly open door and hit the dirt outside the redoubt at the same moment, temporarily blind to the area beyond the arc of light as their eyes adjusted to the surrounding gloom. Ryan went left, JB right. Both held their blasters ready to fire at the least provocation. Ryan felt the ground give slightly beneath his feet. It was hard-packed dirt, suggesting that the area was dry, but there was a soft top layer, almost like dust, which gave him the impression the place in which they had landed was desert terrain. This was reinforced by the sparse trees and vegetation that loomed like dark shadows against the earthen sky as dawn approached. He scanned the immediate area for cover and saw only a small cluster of rocks, barely large enough to shelter one person. He made for the rocks, ready for an enemy to spring into view or to open fire. He skidded to a halt, hunkering down by the rocks, and paused to look around. All remained quiet. He looked across to where the armorer lay flat against the ground, one hand clutching the M4000, the other clamping his battered fedora to his head. Their movements had thrown up a cloud of dust, illuminated in the first rays of approaching dawn. JB shook his head. All was clear on his side of the track. Ryan turned to signal the others to follow, then realized that they wouldn't be able to see him. It was still too dark outside the redoubt. He rose to his feet and looked around. As the sun began to crawl above the horizon, he could see that the redoubt had been built into a hillside that had long since eroded, leaving the roof of the reinforced concrete tunnel almost exposed. The track had obviously, at some time, led down into the lee of the hill, but the weather conditions over the past century or so had virtually leveled the ground for as far as he could see, which suggested that there were harsh storms, possibly chemstorms, and that the desert wind was potentially deadly. They would have to get moving and try to find their way into a more hospitable terrain as soon as possible.
Come on out, it's clear.
He walked back toward the entrance, waving JB back to the light as he did so. By the time he was within the pool of light, the armorer was at his side and the others had emerged from the entrance.
It looks pretty bleak.
No animals. Bad sign.
Ryan had to agree. If the terrain could support little in the way of wildlife, then it was unlikely to welcome the companions.
We need to move as soon as the sun's up. Maybe we'll get a better look around in the light. And once it's up, we can get a direction. Right, JB?
The armorer nodded, already searching his capacious pockets and baggage for his mini-sextant. Mildred faced the entrance and noticed the way the hill had eroded.
What do you think caused that?
Chemstorms, most likely. They could strip anything down if they continued long enough.
Then I would venture to hope that we are not that unlucky.
JB had turned and was looking toward the horizon. The rising sun looked bloated and purple through the shimmering haze of cloud that hung sluggishly in the sky. Purple clouds, the unmistakable sign of toxic chem, seemed to hover malevolently above the desert floor. As the light spread over the land, he could see that the foliage that had struggled to survive was stunted and twisted. Years of chem-soaked rains had affected plant DNA structures. The earth had a faint purple-brown tinge. JB took a reading and pointed to the south-southwest.
Seas over that way, I reckon. Depends how far north we are in the first place, though. Guess the sea should keep the land cleaner over there.
Only one way to find out. We sure as hell can't stay here.
They struck out in the direction JB indicated, once he'd finished consulting his mini-sextant and his old plasticized map. Ryan led the way, with JB bringing up the rear. Between them, Christy and Mildred were followed by Doc and Jack, the albino changing his position in the file to cover Doc's back now that Dean was gone. It was a small thing, not even spoken of among them, but none of them missed its significance. The arid landscape that stretched around them was revealed as the sun fully rose and cast its light over the land. As far as they could see, in every direction, the layer of dusty soil covered hard-packed earth that was streaked with the purple of the chem clouds above. It wasn't actually desert. This was definitely soil rather than sand, but it seemed all the more desolate because of this. The few grasses that were spread in sparse outcroppings were tough, spiked blades that threatened to cut anyone who brushed against them. Few plants could survive in the nutrient-drained, chem-rattled soil, but those that did were sickly specimens that seemed to wither under the hot sun. And a hot sun it was. The chem clouds offered no protection from the harsh rays. Rather, they seemed to intensify the heat, giving off a humid, fetid odor that made breathing an effort. As they marched, the companions were grateful the redoubt had given them plentiful supplies of water, since anything they would find in this wasteland would be tainted and possibly deadly, if they found anything at all. They were also grateful for the salt tablets that Mildred had looted from the pharmacy in the redoubt, and for the protective clothing that they had been able to find. The jackets Mildred, Doc, Jack, and JB had chosen had been made for the old Pacific Northwest weather, and so were thick and heavy. They also had hoods and visors that protected against sunstroke, even if they made you sweat heavily underneath. The entire day's marching was slow and painful. Doc's breathing rasped painfully in time to their footsteps, and Jack stumbled and fell a couple of times, his slight frame needing water and salt tablets more than the others, especially with the heavy protective jacket he wore. Mildred looked back at the pair several times as they marched, concern evident in her face. The barren land seemed to stretch endlessly on all sides of them, and several unspoken questions were rolling around in the companions' heads. Should they have struck out in the opposite direction from where JB had indicated? Should they have taken another day or two's rest in the redoubt, and then made another jump, rather than risk being fried out here? To Mildred, Ryan had seemed to be motivated by more than just his survival instincts this time. Perhaps a desire to escape the confines of the redoubt, the physical symbol of what he had just lost, and to just do something, anything. Or was she just reading that into the situation because she was tired, hot, and cranky? They stopped a couple of times on that first day, taking advantage of the sparse shade offered by a few stunted trees. The shallow root systems of the twisted trunks spread over a long distance before petering out, suggesting that they took whatever sustenance they could from the rain as it fell. It was likely there was no water table unless a person dug deep, something that the lack of damage to the redoubt had suggested earlier, and that the only viable source were the rains. Considering the dryness of the topsoil, it was likely there was little in the way of rainfall on anything approaching a regular basis. But looking at the deadly chem clouds floating above them, and the vast expanse of nothingness around them, the companions were glad of the signs of little rainfall. To be caught in a chem storm with no shelter would potentially be deadly. Still, they trudged on in the heat, moving at a pace that deteriorated as the sun moved painfully slowly across the sky. They were covering nowhere near the distance they usually would in such a time, and the fall of twilight was promising. It cooled rapidly, and although they all knew that before long it would be bone-chillingly cold, the sudden drop in temperature was welcome after the stultifying heat of the day. They continued until they came to the shelter of a stunted copse of trees. Ryan signaled for them to stop, and using the wood around them, they set about building a fire. The light and heat was for protection as much as their own warmth. It would enable them to keep a lookout for any marauding nocturnal creatures. There had been no sign of any kind of life so far, but that wasn't surprising considering the intense heat of the day. Anything that could live in such conditions would have to be hardy and also nocturnal. The night would be the dangerous time. The companions organized themselves into watches and tried to rest. But despite the clothes and thermal blankets they had taken from the redoubt stores, the cold seeped into their bones. When the time came to be roused for watch, none of them could honestly say that they had gotten much rest. As the sun rose the next morning, the companions were tired and out of sorts. Christy stretched, looking up to the green-purple sky, and making the most of that brief period between the chill of night and the heat of day.
Ugh, Gaia, but I hope this wasteland ends soon.
It can't stretch like this for much farther. We should be hitting the coast soon.
Trouble is, what kind of condition are we going to be in when we do? The salt tablets won't last forever, and neither will the water.
Enough yakking, people. We press on. There's no turning back.
Doc fixed Ryan with a stare. Doc's blue eyes, sometimes clouded with troubled visions that only he could see, were today startlingly clear. He could almost see into Ryan's heart, see the pain. But he felt that now was not the time to bring this up, so he resigned himself to handing out self-heats to the other companions, leaving Ryan until last. The one-eyed man gestured that he wasn't hungry.
My dear boy, I do not care whether you're hungry or not. You have to eat to keep up your strength. We are relying on you, do not forget that. You are of little use to us if you do not have the energy reserves to march or to fight, and of little use to yourself.
Ryan frowned and studied the old man. He was right, of course. Ryan sighed and took the food. It was bland and chemical-tasting, as self-heats usually were, but it was fuel. That was all that mattered, apparently. Doc grinned and returned to the others.
JB,
You reckon we're still headed in the right direction?
The armorer checked his mini-sextant and confirmed that they were still on a south-southwest heading.
Then I figure we keep going. We've come too far to turn back. It has to get better.
Jack bent and took a handful of the dry soil, letting it run through his fingers.
There's more out there. Smell it. Hear it. Maybe not much, but something survives on more than this.
Then let's go. The sooner we move, the sooner we get the hell out of this.
They broke camp and set off once more. Jack was right. It was a subtle change, and it took a while for them to notice. But the Gila monster that sprung across their path as they marched brought it home. The environment was gradually becoming more hospitable. The air was still stifling, and the heat from the sun was still intense, but the humidity began to diminish. Looking up, they could see that the chem cloud cover allowed more of the sky to show. The soil around was still dry, but there were signs of lichen and fern. There were softer clumps of grass, thicker and lusher. Stopping to take note, Jack could hear birds and see a few in the distance. Obviously, poor, scrawny creatures, but they were there, as were the reptiles and insects. More than just that Gila monster or the dung beetle that now crawled across his combat boot. Even the presence of a dung beetle suggested there had to be animals from which it could scavenge. Hopefully small animals, not large ones. But the albino could sense no danger in the shape of larger predators.
More life. Maybe food and water, and not so much heat.
Good. Let's press on just a little more before we rest. See if we can find out what's here.
And for the first time in days, something like a smile creased Ryan's grim visage.